much of Indiana gets back on track, details of the governor's roadmap, plus Holcomb gets in hot water in Brown County, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 8th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the vast majority of Indiana counties entered into Stage 2 of Governor Eric Holcomb's roadmap to reopening. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports on the details of Holcomb's Back on Track plan.
The stay-at-home order was stage one. In stage two, manufacturers, shopping malls, and retail and commercial businesses may operate at 50% of building capacity. 1 week after that, personal services like hair salons and tattoo parlors may open by appointment only. And restaurants may open for dine-in services at 50% capacity. Stage three in late May expands social gatherings to as many as 100 people, and most businesses open to 75% capacity. Stage four opens tourism, bars, and nightclubs at 50% capacity. And stage five opens conventions, festivals, and fairs. Holcomb says the timeline isn't set in stone.
We see a lot of variables out there that could make us change course.
The state's timeline would lift all restrictions by July 4th.
Is this the right move for Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is the timing of this roadmap right?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, you had to give Governor Holcomb credit when he shut the state down, in contrast to a lot of Republican governors who profess not to believe in science or experts or anything else. But opening it up this soon means he has just given in to the Tea Party and the demonstrations that have occurred. Because the one thing that consistently came out of Washington was that we shouldn't open up until we see a two-week steady decline in the number of cases. We're not there yet. Our cases are up and down, and they're growing. The number of deaths are growing. In states around us, which have much fewer fatalities per 100,000 than we do, are still closed. So no, the timing is not right. And they're expecting, based on these projections, and I know everybody has a different model on these, but one model I've seen indicates that we're going to be number four in the country in terms of fatalities because of this. So no, it's not the right timing. And just when he was showing some backbone and some intelligence about listening to the scientists and the experts, he folds. And it's just not the right decision, especially since we're not even testing at the capacity they say we need to be at, which is 6,000 per day. We're still not doing that. And we don't have enough people tracing who is infected, and all of the things telling us now that we have enough ventilators and enough ICU beds is like saying, well, you know, we'll just buy more ventilators, so if more people have to be hospitalized or more people die, we'll be prepared. Well, I don't like that first case scenario. I think we ought to be more intelligent about opening it. And I think Mayor Hobsett, for example, has done the right thing by extending the stay-at-home order.
Michael, and Governor Holcomb has made clear that local leaders can make their own decisions on whether to go a little further with their own stay-at-home orders than the states. But Mike O'Brien, Ann Delaney did point out something, which was that Indiana, of the states that are starting to reopen, which is a lot of states around the country, has one of the highest per capita death rates from COVID-19. Now, state leaders said that was because Indiana is, generally speaking, more unhealthy than most states in terms of obesity, smoking rates, diabetes rates, things like that. But today, Governor Holcomb was asked if he was gambling with people's lives in choosing to reopen now. Is he?
Well, he also said that Dr. Box reiterated that if you are in a high-risk category, you need to continue to hunker down and stay put to the extent that you can. This idea that Governor Holcomb folded under political pressure, there's no evidence of that. What the protesters wanted at these press conferences is not a gradual five phased in plan to reopening that is subject to change if the data and the medical experts start seeing things go seriously a different direction. They wanted no restrictions, and that is clearly not what is happening here. This is a very deliberate, data-driven exercise between now and July 4th. They're going to continue, as I've said every single day at these press conferences, continue to monitor the data that they're seeing. The key metric is our hospitalizations down. If we're doing the, if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing on testing and contact tracing, the metric of cases being discovered going down won't happen for maybe years. If we're testing thousands and thousands and thousands of people a day, we're going to find thousands and thousands and thousands more cases. That doesn't mean that those people are at imminent risk of death. It means we need to go into this next phase of gradual reopening, understanding how it's traveling through a community and trying to put limits on that.
John Schwanis, I want to ask this, which is the governor has set out these five phases and he's put specific dates with them. Now, he has been very open about saying, we've heard it in the piece from Lauren Chapman, that the dates are flexible, that they will monitor the data, and if we need to push, for instance, phase three a little further out, that we'll do that. If we need to even roll back some of, go back to some of the restrictions, we'll do that too. But is he setting himself up for failure by putting hard dates, even if they're not that hard, that people will expect things to be reopening by?
I'm sure that the calendar was in some ways determined by Independence Day and the notion that everybody would be free to do what he or she likes at any business that he or she likes or gather in any size party that he or she likes on the 4th of July. I'm guessing that was the first date put on the calendar and then everything else was sort of penciled in moving back from that. I think you could argue that by having specific dates and targets, it does give a sense of clarity, a sense of a roadmap that frankly is lacking in a lot of states that just simply say we're going to sort of ease up a little bit at a time and see where this takes us. If he said that I'm going to stick to these dates no matter what, and even if the number of infection spikes or the number of deaths, heaven forbid, spikes, we're going to stick with this. He's not saying that. He's made clear that he is willing to push things back and push deadlines. So I don't really see much harm in attaching some goals, you might say, culminating I'm sure with a great amount of symbolism with that Independence Day deadline or the opposite of a deadline, free line, finish line, let's say, at the end of the process.
Nikki Kelly, there's a lot of details in these five stages. Are they a little, and as with everything that has gone on with COVID-19 up till now, a lot of the success or failure will be determined on how people are actually following these guidelines and recommendations. So is it a little too complicated?
You know, it's pretty complicated. And to be honest, they've put out a lot of information trying to kind of anticipate all the questions. But I'm getting a dozen questions a day with very particular things, you know. Can my dance class meet if there are fewer than 25? Even though you can't have sports until June 14th, can you still practice? And there's no place for Hoosiers to go and maybe call and ask those questions or send an email in and ask. I think that would be a really helpful thing for Hoosiers rather than kind of trying to be a lawyer and figure out, you know, what is allowed when.
Yeah, I think the email and phone number that people are utilizing to ask those questions right now are yours and mine and other state house reporters. All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, what do you think of Governor Holcomb's plan to lift Indiana's stay-at-home order? Is it A, too soon, B, not soon enough, or C, just right? Last week's question, we asked, should the state hire more than 500 people who will begin this coming week to do contact tracing in the fight against COVID-19? 83% of you say yes, there should be more, and 17% say 500 was right to begin with. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. While staying on the governor's plan, we want to talk about a more specific provision in it. He says that places of worship will serve as a, quote, test or control group under his back-on-track plan. Holcomb's guidelines still impose restrictions on businesses and recreation areas, keeping some closed and mandating capacity limits on others, but religious institutions can hold worship services starting May 8th without limitation. Holcomb says he thought they would be the, quote, most responsible group to let fully reopen.
But I did say that we needed those church leaders to be responsible for their congregations.
Holcomb adds that what happens with those houses of worship and their impact on COVID-19 cases will inform the state going forward.
If we can manage this, this gives us a lot of confidence in some other arenas as well.
The state still urges religious institutions to follow social distancing and mask-wearing guidelines or to hold virtual services whenever possible. Mike O'Brien, is it a good idea for the state to just trust that religious institutions are going to do the right thing here?
Well, hopefully, it's certainly a population, hopefully, of people that love their neighbor and want to make sure that they're healthy and comply with some of these with these requirements and these guidelines and social distancing and other things. On the other hand, it may be the crowd that's least compliant or willing to believe the science behind all this.
Ann Delaney, are you worried at all about, I mean, the idea that churches really don't have restrictions unlike every other business under these plans? Or every other institution under these plans?
I think so. And I think also what I've seen is that it's very difficult to do this in part. I mean, it's fine to say go and keep the social distance and all in large groups like that. It doesn't happen. I mean, people get closer. They see somebody. They go over. They forget the mask, as the governor did. Or they forget and touch. And I think it's very dangerous. And we saw videos from, granted from other states, but of some of these churches who think that somehow or other that God, who I think demands common sense of us, is saying there's no risk in coming into church as long as you're going to pray. You don't have to stay apart. You can touch, you can hug, you can share things. That's just simply not the case with this virus. And I think this is a very risky proposition. And I hope the governor means it when he says that when spikes occur, he's going to reevaluate these steps of his, because this is fraught with risk.
Nikki Kelly, we've seen reports both elsewhere and in Indiana of churches during the stay-at-home order who were simply ignoring what were actual restrictions that carried the force of law, as opposed to these, which are now just, well, we'd like you to continue doing virtual services when possible, or just doing it in the parking lot, but we're not going to require you to do anything. So is Eric Holcomb okay to just trust and let Jesus take the wheel here?
Well, it may not only be Jesus.
I just know that, I mean, this whole issue of religious freedom was really becoming a major conflict in these stay-at-home orders, and the governor clearly reacted to that and found a way to please that part of his conservative base. Now, hopefully we won't see a spike, but you know, if they're anything the same as when I go to Meijer and people are standing around in little groups chatting, you know, they're not near 6 feet away from each other. So if that's the similar thing, I mean, I guess in some ways you could say we're all in trouble because it's happening whether it's in church or not.
No, that's a good point. John Schwanes, obviously the first risk we always talk about, and I've been saying this for weeks, is about people's lives, their livelihoods, when we talk about the economic impact of all of these things. But given the nature of this show, we also sometimes talk about the political risk. So Nikki just alluded to it. That there was a lot of pressure from a more conservative base of Eric Holcomb's, but there's also the pressure of, if we do this and it goes poorly, there will be a larger population that gets upset. So is Governor Holcomb taking a bigger risk by allowing churches to reopen than he would have if he had kept them closed or at least limited?
I think, as Nikki suggested, the pressure on him was building. This is part of his core constituency, conservatives, religious conservatives, who are perhaps willing to put their health and their well-being in the Lord's hands, as they would say, and assume that God's will work its manner. You know, up to this point, the governor seems to have paid at least homage and tribute to science as the guiding light in a lot of these decisions. And again, even with the five-stage process that was just outlined a moment ago, he has said if science and the numbers suggest that that is ambitious, there will be adjustments. if there's any abdication of attention being paid to science, I would say this is the example. The notion that this will be a control group that is somehow more responsible, I think, while it certainly is aspirational on his part, is not borne out by what we've seen with the evidence, as was noted a moment ago, across the country and here in Indiana, where people are very willing to say, these are my brothers and sisters. We're clean, in not so many words, and God will take care of us if we hug and embrace and do whatever we want. So I think it's wishful thinking at best that somehow these groups, these cohorts, will be more adherent to social distancing guidelines than the general population.
Yeah. All right, well, a critical part of the whole reopening plan, Indiana launched a PPE marketplace this week for Hoosier small businesses, many of whom must use the safety gear under the state's reopening guidelines. The portal, which is going to be run, or which is being run, by the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, will connect businesses of no more than 150 employees with Indiana companies that are producing these critical supplies. IEDC Chief of Staff Luke Basso says businesses will receive bundles through the marketplace, free of charge at the beginning, based on the size of their company.
These bundles include masks, face shields, 1 gallon bottles, and 2 ounce bottles of hand sanitizer. At this time, only the bundles will be available on the marketplace.
Business owners say PPE is hard to find, and the marketplace is only open to restaurants, retail, personal services, and office environments. Basso encourages businesses to team up on finding protective equipment.
Trying to find 10 masks right now is going to be more difficult than it would be to try to find 10,000. So talk to your neighbor businesses, talk to your neighbor restaurants, and work together.
Basso says Hoosier businesses should view the marketplace as a backup, not a primary source for PPE. John Schwanis, simply put, is the state doing enough to ensure that businesses can get access to the PPE they literally need?
I don't know what, I guess time will tell whether it's right for the state of Indiana. If we compare, though, what this administration is doing with its counterparts across the country, I would say it's being far less proactive and far less aggressive. If you look, for instance, we often talk about California. Back in early April, Gavin Newsom, the governor there, spent, I think, was more than $1 billion or close to $1 billion in a plan to secure PPE for essential workers and healthcare workers and others who needed it, saying that he was no longer willing to just sit back and let the federal government, drive the bus. Then more recently, you had our neighbors here in Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, the governor there, who spent a couple $100,000 chartering aircraft to go to China and pick up PPE secretly, basically, because he was afraid, he said, that the Trump administration would, if they found out, would somehow try to hijack those protective gear that was bound for Illinois residents. And then this week we saw New York and 4 other states in the Northeast banding together as a consortium to buy PPE in what has been described as sort of a Wild Wild West market out there, where the highest bids seem to prevail. So is the governor doing something? Yeah. Is it right for Indiana? Maybe. I don't have my finger on that, on the pulse of small business to the point of knowing whether they can gain these access to these things readily or not. But clearly, this administration is not being aggressive, as at least some other states across the country.
Nikki Kelly, at this press conference, we heard it in the piece, Luke Basso and others, you know, really emphasized this marketplace that the state is setting up is a backup, that you should rely on your regular PPE suppliers to get what you really need, and then come to us if you can't find it there. But I don't know about you, but after I wrote the story, I was deluged with emails from people who have no regular PPE suppliers, right?
Exactly. I mean, a lot of these businesses have never had to have this before. And I can tell you, I haven't been able to find a sanitizing wipe in 6 weeks. So I can't imagine being a business and having to suddenly have masks and wipes and gloves for all my employees to be able to continue to open.
And Delaney, what does the state need to do to up its efforts in this area?
Well, this points out why opening up everything, even in stages, is premature. We have to have this data by testing. We have to have the supplies there, and we don't have either. So this is way too soon, and we are jeopardizing people's health. You know, we talk about the people that go to church. Okay, if they want to risk the infection and perhaps death, that's up to them. The problem is it only takes one of them walking into Meijer or any place else to infect another 100 people who have nothing to do with that church. And the same is true with these businesses. And that's why this is premature on the governor's part.
Mike O'Brien, the guidelines for reopening say if you're a certain type of business, you need to do a few things in terms of safety. Observing the social distancing guidelines by capping capacity in your store. You need to have hand sanitizer, masks for your employees. But if you can't find this stuff, is the governor putting some businesses at a disadvantage from even being able to open back up?
Well, I think that's the point of this resource that the state's providing this supply chain that they've tried to create for the very purpose of when you and Nikki just said you're writing these stories and you're getting deluged by business owners and others who have never had to do any of this before. Well, those are the people that should be going to this the state should be assisting, not those that have ready access to it and understand where to source this.
Then I want to follow up briefly with you, Mike. Does there perhaps need to be, obviously the marketplace is meant for small businesses limited by the number of employees, and that helps get to that issue. But should the guidelines even be a little more restrictive in terms of, have you ever had to use PPE or buy PPE before? Well, if so, then you need to look somewhere else first. I mean, does it need to be more restrictive to help target that population that really needs it?
Yeah, it might be. I mean, if we can't supply it adequately, then yeah, probably.
Well, Governor Eric Holcomb, and this was alluded to a little while ago, did apologize this week after he was photographed this past weekend out in public without following the proper COVID-19 safety procedures. A selfie posted on an Indiana woman's Facebook page and shared widely by a local Democratic Party Twitter account shows Holcomb taking a photo with the woman and her daughter without a mask and well within 6 feet of each other. In a statement, Holcomb says he left his mask in the car when retrieving takeout from a local restaurant, what he calls a lapse in his usual vigilance. He apologized to healthcare professionals and every Hoosier working to slow the spread of COVID-19. He calls the incident a lesson learned that even a quick photo requires following experts' guidance to wear a mask in public. In a statement, the Indiana Democratic Party called Holcomb's actions hypocritical and selfish.
Nikki Kelly, do you think this has blown over by now? We're about almost a week out from it.
Yeah, it's pretty much blown over. I think he did the right thing by immediately apologizing and sort of saying, whoops, my bad. The only issue I would have is he seemed to only apologize for not wearing the mask, and we've never understood why it was okay during essential travel only for him to go hang out in a state park. That same county, by the way, whose commissioners asked Holcomb to step in because so many people were coming to Brown County and they were afraid of people coming from hotspots like Marion County and bringing the spread of the virus to them.
John Schwannis, Holcomb did immediately apologize this weekend, and then Monday he was asked and addressed, essentially apologizing again, kind of reiterating what he had said via a statement at his usual press conference. But does it have a ripple effect so much of, as we've talked about this, so much of the reopening plan relies on people obeying the guidelines and or suggestions, and mask wearing and social distancing has long been a suggestion and a recommendation of the state. Is he hurting that effort by not doing it even in what he calls a momentary lapse of judgment?
I don't think so. I think he handled it pretty well. By issuing the apology, by calling it a lapse in his usual vigilance, I think people are willing to forgive and forget. I mean, who among us? We're not robots. We haven't been raised to follow these guidelines. It's all something we've embraced in the past, 6 weeks, 2 months? And I'm guessing most of us from time to time will have a lapse, whether it's we're not wearing a mask at the right time or some other failure to heed every guideline here. So I think people get that and they understand. I think the bigger problem would have been if he had sort of brushed it off the way, for instance, the president did in visiting Honeywell facility in Arizona this week, where he didn't wear a mask and basically sort of poo-pooed it, even after his own vice president had issued an apology over the weekend for an earlier lapse, one might say, at Mayo during a visit to Mayo Clinic.
And Delaney, the governor made a mistake. he owned up to it, he apologized for it. But isn't the idea of everyone can have these lapses in judgment evidence of the risk we're taking with the reopening plan?
That's exactly the problem. I mean, I obviously he handled it as well as he could have. Okay, fine. But the problem is that once you start loosening them, once you start saying it's okay to do certain things, people forget. I'm not saying they intentionally do it, but they do have lapses.
Yeah.
And my point is it doesn't take much. In South Korea, for example, they had one person infected go to 3 nightclubs, and they have a crisis.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.